You're watching Network Radio. Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, where I'm very pleased to have as my special guest this evening, Raphael O'Neill, who has spent the last 5 years doing research on climate engineering and weather modification and the facts behind the geoengineering agenda. Raphael, I'm pleased to have you here this evening. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much it means to me to be able to be here on the show tonight and to share this with your audience. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm just delighted and want to take full advantage of the research you've conducted. So we're ready to begin with your first slide.
Okay, well, let's start with the first slide besides the title page here. Chance?
Yep.
So here we have this vision of... Sorry, I don't know if it's big enough there, but all the shoes that were left at the recent Paris Climate Conference talks, because in sight of the recent terrorist attacks, there was a security buffer around the climate change talks, which leads one to question whether there might have been another reason for the terror attacks besides the ones that we're familiar with.
And the terrorist attacks were all contrived, by the way. They were staged. So while some people may have died, there's a lot of evidence that the whole thing was a fake event, sorry to say.
No, sure. And I could tell you that there was some blood because I was born in Paris, and my father said a friend of his had a friend whose text message said, "I'm all right. The blood on me is not mine." So we know some people that it hit home with, but it doesn't mean that they don't fake or exaggerate or add victims or, you know, false flag the whole PSYOP and have an agenda behind it.
For example, we have photographs from inside the club where the band had already closed down its set, you know, put together its equipment, which you would hardly expect if this had come unexpectedly.
Well, sure. So let me provide another layer to this onion, because, you know, there's never one reason, but multiple reasons for things to happen. But what happened soon after, the next thing that happened was the Paris Climate Conference talks, and you could not get anywhere near there. And I have activist friends who have been to past climate change conferences to talk about geoengineering and our concerns with it having already been going on. And we're going to get into the vast history here. There's a lot of ground to cover in a little bit of time, so I'm going to just keep moving forward. But what was going on at the climate change talks? You can go to the next slide here. Well, basically, we're getting into a situation where scientists, geoengineers especially, are trying to, you know, find solutions to global warming via a whole set of different
criteria, approaches, methods.
Well, yep. the whole bunch of different methods. We're going to focus on aerial dispersals, aerial spraying of heavy metal particulates, which is what geoengineering wants to do to help deflect the sunlight and cool the earth and, you know, make a greater albedo to the clouds where they have greater reflectivity, and that's supposed to help with global warming. So what geoengineers say about this is if you have cancer, you might decide that eating a poison is the right thing to do because it's going to kill the cancer cells more than the good cells. And I look at geoengineering much the same way. Well, let's look at this for a second, because the cancer, is the global warming that they want to get rid of. Or help manage. The good cells is what? It's you and it's me. We're the good cells. We're the life forms and some of the things like that might actually have to go by the wayside in, you know, for the greater good, of course. So let's go to the next slide here, Chance. We have, this is what they're proposing, aerosols in the stratosphere, giant reflectors in orbit. They also have iron fertilization of the sea, which is not my category here. I'm sticking to the sky and the clouds. Let's go on
are
to
you,
the...
Wait a minute. Now, Raphael, are you saying that the chemtrails are supposed to reflect light away from the sun and therefore promote global cooling?
Yes, that's what they say. Now, that's what they're very much pushing. They're hoping it will do more good than harm. Now, here is just one of multiple studies on the next slide, which is what I'm here to say is no, it cannot fix, mitigate, or do anything for global warming because, well, if you look at the end of this summary here, it's therefore geoengineering by means of sulfate aerosols is predicted to accelerate the hydroxyl catalyzed ozone destruction.
Accelerate.
The ozone destruction, yes, cycles and causes significant depletion of the ozone layer, even though future halogen concentrations will be significantly reduced. So it has a short-term cooling effect, which we saw after September 11th when there were no flights. There was a warming that happened from the lack of cloud coverage. But the thing is that long-term, it perpetuates the need to use this technology because you are creating more holes in the ozone. And, yes, clouds deflect heat. But if you look at Venus, you've got the Venus effect. It is a super hot planet. I'm not equipped to tell you just how hot. You can Google that. But it's full of cloud coverage. Clouds also trap heat. And as you know, when there's a cloudy day, it's not as cool as when there aren't any clouds. So there are. It's not a perfect science. In fact, it's far from that, and we'll get into that. Now, sorry, I just want to...
My belief has been that the particulates in the atmosphere, including aluminum particles, I gather it's aluminum, barium, and strontium, which you can correct if that's mistaken, can be heated by distant sources such as HARP to create high pressure zones to manage the weather.
Absolutely. They have ionospheric heaters. They can heat up the ionosphere. They can move the jet stream around. When you can move the jet stream around, there's not too much else you can't do. They charge
There's some suspicion that even this huge snowfall in Washington, D.C. was manipulated so they could pass a draconian bill to give Obama the right to conduct warfare anywhere in the world without further congressional approval.
I'm not familiar with that angle particularly, but I know we have chemically nucleated ice. We have bacteria that can cause plants to freeze above freezing temperatures. They can make ice. They can dispel ice. They can manipulate hurricanes. But I'm just going to go here into.
Yeah, go for it.
The thing is that we know that these not only can it not fix climate change, we know that there's a history of complaints about. Well, climate engineering. Okay, first of all. So if you go to the next slide over here, this is the Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation, United States Senate document 1978. Go to the next page. This is the same document. Next slide, please, Chance. The federal government has been involved in over 30 years in a number of aspects of weather modification through activities. I have part of the screen cut off here, so... I can't really see it, but maybe I should look at my own notes. But there's since 1947 weather modification bills pertaining to research support, operations policies, committees, and international concerns have been introduced. So this is an official document that's decades old that says that weather modification has been going on for decades. Go to the next slide, please. These are some of the complaints that people have had. The cloud seeding has been responsible for the great 5-year drought in the northeast United States, that isolated sections in the northeast have experienced prolonged periods of drought due to cloud seeding, weather disturbances, crop production loss, when effects of seeding wear off, cloud bursts occur, floods, destroying crops, buildings, drowning people. Seeding has been responsible for serious air pollution. Mental retardation and insanity are traceable to cloud chemicals. Poisoning of all living matters directly related to emphysema, cancer, financial losses. So it goes on. Let's go on to the next slide. And we're just going to hit you with some facts because I don't want anybody to have the room for denial here. The next one is an ICAS report. This is going to show the cohesion between bureaus. ICAS report number 15A proposed the program for accelerating national progress in the modification of weather through consolidation of a number of prime government weather modification efforts into 7 key projects. A lead agency was designated for each of the proposed national projects. The national projects were defined as multi-agency efforts of major national significance, which were considered to have a near-term potential for meeting identifying national needs. So there is a history as well of cooperation between different agencies and multi-state cooperation. And go to the next slide. Just documenting everything for everyone's benefit, if we can slip. Okay. Looking here. Defense Department aircraft work all weather patterns in the Mid-Atlantic state. One section of heavy concentration in the southern tier of Pennsylvania counties. Pennsylvania has earned a reputation of lawlessness relative to cloud seeding. So we have lawlessness complaints. We have liability complaints. We have a whole history of decades with just damaging of crops. This is not a controllable medium. Let's go on to the next slide, please. So if y'all wondering what we're talking about, this is it. Quite simply, before, during, and after. You will see a blue sky day. You will see these planes come and they just start laying their goo. And it was a blue, beautiful blue sky day. Nothing changed in the weather, but all of a sudden the clouds start leaving contrails and we're calling them chemtrails, but let's just give the benefit of the doubt. They lay these persistent contrails is the official term. And then after a while, you can watch them. I mean, these can linger for hours, and there's even quick disperse that dissipate quickly, but look, they'll dissipate, and then they'll fan out and haze out, and you no longer have a blue sky sunny day. You have a partly cloudy day, they call it. I mean, it's a fully cloudy day. You don't have any sun, and that's solar radiation management. So let's go down. And these next slides, we're just going to keep clicking through. These are pictures that I've taken. Hold on that one. This one is important. Before we go to the pictures I've taken of these cloud formations, I would like to just read to you this very important document from NASA. And not that I'm a big fan of NASA's, but some of their raw data is to be trusted. Their interpretation on a lot of things, not necessarily. But in this document, labeled The Importance of Understanding Clouds, they say even small changes in the abundance or location of clouds could change the climate more than the anticipated changes caused by greenhouse gases, human-produced aerosols, or other factors associated with global change. Okay, let's just sit with that for a minute. Even small changes in the abundance or location of clouds could change the climate more than the anticipated changes caused by greenhouse gases, human-produced aerosols, or other factors associated with global change. That's really big right there.
Because that is very telling. Yeah, assuming that's correct, that's very, very telling.
Well, I believe this to be true because we see this. We see this. Now, and I'm going to get into this more later. I recently went to the American Meteorological Society conference that was in New Orleans, and I got to speak with some of the scientists there. So I understand where their disconnect is. And they just don't give enough credence to cloud seeding or just contrails as being able to seriously affect the weather. But recently the Smithsonian Institute admitted that contrail clouds are in natural geoengineering, which is what us activists have been saying for years. So let's go through the next slides here. These are some pictures that I documented.
Now these were taken in New Orleans?
In New Orleans, from New Orleans to Charleston, South Carolina over the last few years. You can click.
Okay.
The next one, we have rainbows that are like parallel to the ground. You have, this was a blue sky day until the planes came out. Go ahead to the next one. I mean,
Raphael, why, if the government believes it has a legitimate reason for doing this, has it not informed the public that that's what it's doing?
Well, I mean, that's a great question, which history, when we're going to get into the history of weather modification, keep clicking and just keep clicking fast because we have a lot of slides to get through. Yeah. Oh, no. And I'll tell you when we can stop clicking here. But just, there's a number one is a liability issue. That's the number one thing that keeps coming around and around and around. Look, right there we have a contrail and a chemtrail, although there's no telling that the contrail isn't also a quick disperse chemtrail, because I heard sometimes they work together from people that have worked in these programs, but off the books, that the one trail trip, you know, one plane lays one thing and another plane lays another, and together they form something else. I don't have any evidence for that, but you know, if the sky and the conditions are supposed to yield persistent contrails, they should do that for all the planes in that space at the same time. And we have videos of contrails intersecting chemtrails on the same kind of plane, supposedly. You can keep going. Just keep sliding.
Just say next.
Because I'm going to get to the next points here. It's just a lot to show the just, it's a daily onslaught. When I first woke up to it, I saw the movie, What in the World Are They Spraying? And I happened to look up that day and I saw the biggest example of, you know, sprayed aircraft. And, the sky I just saw them, the blue sky disappearing behind jet trails. And, I couldn't believe it. And I didn't see anything for like two more months because I was like looking at the sky every day. So I really felt like it was my calling. But here on these next slides that you're going to come to, I mean, we have one more here. You see these, I mean, we see planes that aren't following commercial airlines, although they do add it to commercial jet fuel. So we do also see it in commercial planes can leave contrails. Here we have carbon black chemtrails. Well, how do you explain that for condensation? just go through the next ones as well. These are up close shots. I didn't take these shots, but, I mean, that's a heck of a lot of contrail. If you want to believe that, I would love to sell you some property in on the moon, but, they can feed the clouds. The next one here, you're going to see clicked on the next two. Yeah. The inside of a chemtrail plane. Then the next one you have.
It looks very scary all by itself. I mean,
And you know what? The more you know about it, the scarier it gets. So, but not addressing this is not making the problem go away. It's getting worse. And we really need to understand what is going on.
Now, bear in mind, Raphael, we've only taken 20 minutes and you've already gone through 40 slides. So you may be going faster than you think. Remember, we have 2 hours.
Oh yeah. No, that's okay. That's okay. This is 20 minutes. That's fine. But these slides were intended to go fast. We have a
okay.
Systems and methods for aerial dispersion of materials. I looked that up. That is a real patent this shot is a legitimate shot. We can keep going here. We've got this one is obviously not a contrail. Well, there's video of this that shuts off and on. These are maybe funny behavior for a contrail. And then on the next one we have our United States patent number 5003186, March 26, 1991, stratospheric Welsbach seating, 1991. Before any of us were talking, you can stop now and actually go back for a second. If you don't mind, I'm sorry. Now we're at regular rhythm. The particle seeding should be done at an altitude on the order of 10 kilometers. The particles may be seeded by dispersal from seeding aircraft. One exemplary technique may be via the jet fuel as suggested by prior work regarding the metallic particles. So there are patents for jet fuel additives or geoengineering. I have a complete list of patents. I've been just collecting the weather modification history timeline and putting it together. And it's pretty impressive. It's hiding in plain sight. There is so much history hiding in plain sight. And some people don't even know about weather they fight you about chemtrails because they don't even know about weather modification. But next slide, please. Weathermodification.com. We see potential. And these are legitimate company. It's just one of many companies that offers weather modification solutions. If you have enough money, you can order you some rain. And part of the problem, and we're going to get into that as well, is a governance issue. You know, this technology exists, but they don't want it in the hands of everybody. They don't want every Joe Schmo being able to, you know, as a farmer being able to bring rain down on their farm if they need it. I mean, right now, any Joe Schmo can order it. It's simple enough. And I don't know what the costs are. You could maybe see with weathermodification.com what they charge. But there's overt programs that are just hidden in front of your face, and then there's covert programs that you can't get anywhere near, but you see the effects of it. And I mean, here, I'm not going to get into this, but I've got soil analysis reports from the North Shore. We got aluminum and barium showing up in very high amounts that the labs don't know where it's coming from. Myself and my son that is 2 years old, I birthed some of my toxins in. I'm not sure where all they came from, but I've got barium and aluminum and strontium and arsenic and lead and cadmium and uranium. So who knows where they all come from? I can't prove any of that. But the thing is that if you went out and got yourself tested, unless you've been living in a bubble, and not just blood tested, because whatever's circulating in your blood, your body is really good at storing dangerous elements usually. So for a while, until it can't anymore and it breaks down. But a hair analysis test is a much solid. I mean, it's a $100 hair analysis test, and it told me so many things. So I recommend everyone goes out and gets one to see where they're at, because what we also need to do is work on detoxification from heavy metals, and you'll see some more of why that later on. If we can go to the next.
You're talking about a hair test?
Hair analysis test for heavy metals, yeah. And it has even told me my nutritional deficiencies and all that. But, yeah, you can – if you can order – if you can find someone who does a hair analysis test. I got someone in Louisiana. I would check. Yeah. It's pretty inexpensive. It's pretty amazing. You could get so much information on such a cheap hair test. And I don't know why they don't give those out at the hospitals like they do AIDS tests, but we would benefit from that, and we would be really alarmed as a society if we started realizing what's inside of us. The stratospheric Welsbach seeding for reduction of global warming patent, again, here. You can go to the next one. So this is our chemtrail patent. Chemtrails. Now,
and that was back in 1991.
That's back in 1991.
So if the government even has these patents, how can it be remotely debatable? I mean, if in fact they have the evidence to establish it, why aren't they sharing it with the public?
Well, in a way, I mean, it's hiding in plain sight. But the media, good luck getting the media to answer any questions or to acknowledge you or to call you anything but a crazy conspiracy theorist, which we understand the cognitive dissonance that goes along with a lot of the denial. I'm sure your listeners are very familiar with that in whatever other fields they like to follow. But this, nothing more than this almost is the most taboo, although there's a big awakening, but in the chemtrail community, there's a big movement saying, don't call it chemtrails. You'll just be rolled. You know, people will roll their eyes at you. Call it geoengineering. Well, I don't like geoengineering. I mean, I'll use that term. It's climate engineering, but geoengineering implies that it's a technology that will fix climate change and global warming, but it cannot, when you look at what it does, it causes more climate change and global warming. So geoengineering is their excuse for it. They're trying to legitimize it right now. But the real term is chemtrails, because look, it's even an Air Force document, chemtrails. Even the military it's chemtrails. And even a contrail technically is a chemtrail, because you've got these jet exhaust particles or whatever. But anyway, chemtrails is a legitimate term. I try not to start a conversation talking about climate chemtrails. I try to address climate engineering, because climate engineering is not debatable right off the bat. And none of this is if you have enough information. Here we are trying to get the information out to you. So hang in there. It's going to be a roller coaster. That's next one, please. I'll try to catch up here. This is okay, I'm way back here. I'm not sure which one that is. There's some more.
It seems to be talking about some of the objectives of the
project. Oh, yes, this is the right. Executive summary of the World Meteorological Statement on Weather Modification. But I don't have
reduction of hail damage, dispersion of fog, sure. Other types of cloud and storm modifications by cloud seeding.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what the World Meteorological Organization said in 2007, and I'm going to just go here, see if I get it here, that in recent years there has been a decline in weather modification research and a tendency to go directly into operational projects. And that was back in 2007, they admitted that. So moving on.
Chance, I think, has a comment here about the Canadian law. Would you like to mention this, Chance? It seems to me that's a significant issue.
Yeah, here in Canada, I've participated in a lot of the geoengineering protests here in Canada and the chemtrails marches. And one of the things in Canada we like to reference to people is you can go on the Canadian government's website and look up Weather Modification Act, and we have, like I just linked it to you on Skype, the Canadian government's own website with the laws, and it breaks down exactly what weather modification is. It says that weather modification includes any action designed to intend or produce physical or chemical means to change the composition dynamics of the atmosphere with the purpose of increasing, decreasing, redistributing precipitation, decreasing and suppressing hail, lightning, fog, clouds, and other such. And then it goes on to a whole bunch of legal jumble. But, I mean, it's literally on our government website. We have laws on it. They have fines in that based on if you don't alert the public to the spraying. Like, this is a literally undeniable proof on our own website here in Canada from our official government. So, I mean, go ahead, deniers.
Right, exactly. I didn't know that. I'll add that to the list. I mean, and all of this, if I get into the weather modification history, it's mostly American highlights because there is other countries that are involved in this. So we can click through this next one too. Okay. All right. This is, this is another interesting NASA research. Well, I don't know if it was NASA directly or some other scientists loosely affiliated with NASA, but A new study led by climate scientist Drew Schindel of the NASA Goddard Institute of Space Studies, New York, used a coupled ocean atmosphere model to investigate how sensitive different regional climates are to changes in levels of carbon dioxide, ozone, and aerosols. The research found that the mid and high latitudes are especially responsive to changes in the levels of aerosols. Indeed, the model suggests aerosols likely account for 45% or more of the warming that has occurred in the Arctic during the last three decades. The results were published in the April issue of Nature Geoscience. Now, I'm going to try to pull up this. I don't have the back page of it, but okay. Yeah, basically it says it finished to say the study that unless we address the aerosol element, that CO2 and I don't know, now I'm mixing it. There was a NASA study that said if we don't address clouds, it won't matter what else we do to I'm sorry, I might be mixing up my documents. I don't want to misquote here, but anyways, it's either that. One of the two NASA articles says, regardless of what we do with CO2, if we don't address either clouds or aerosols, I say both, and they're not really separate these days anymore because we haven't seen natural weather, I believe, in well over a decade, and especially this last 5 years has been exponential.
Well, there is some discussion, this liability thing, you're saying that's a reason for not acknowledging it's being...
Well, yes, liability for weather modification, you know, we're going to give a lot of examples of liability. This is from that original U.S. Senate document in 78. If a drought or a severe storm occurs after weather modification attempts have occurred, issues concerning liability for damages may arise. These issues would include causation as well as the application of a number of theories of tort recovery, including nuisance, strict liability, trespass, and negligence. Other bases of liability might be present depending on the particular facts and circumstances attending any specific incident. In addition, issues concerning air and water pollution could be raised. So before a general discussion of these issues is begun, it would be helpful to examine briefly state statutes which discuss liability. And when we're going to get into the weather modification history after these documents, we'll get into some more examples of how the liability.
Well, Raphael, it looks to me right now that Southern California is hit with an artificially contrived drought, and it's just devastating. Wow. The value of some of the most valuable farmland in the world has been dropping precipitously. If ever there were a case for a lawsuit, I would think that would be it.
Well, and then this is where this is where Agenda 21 comes in, kind of. I mean, that's one of the ways you could weaponize it if you wanted to. I mean, or it could be a side effect. I mean, this is theorizing here, but not really, because I'm going to get into what does all this really do? I mean, there's a lot of little agendas, and on the way to this agenda and that agenda, what you're doing is you're who was it that said that the environmental crises will be the key to unlocking the new world order? Is that Gorbachev? I mean, there's several quotes out there talking about that. So what do? You're creating a situation that's too big for a sovereign state to be able to have the power. I mean, for America to vote on what they need to do on an issue that affects the whole world, well, that just wouldn't be right. So you need to take away the power from the sovereign state and turn the sovereign states into city states, while the UN, the CFR, or whoever has meetings behind closed doors about something way too important to tell the people about. No press allowed. Gag orders, we'll talk about that later on. So now you have these who we don't know who men deciding issues of world security. And
well, when they said unlock the new world order, does that mean introduce it, where you have this supranational board of corporate attorneys overriding the sovereignty of various states, including the U.S. Constitution?
Well, this is where we're at.
Well, it ends with the TV.
What do you think happened there? Is that matters of national security that were decided without our input? Whether or not geoengineering can be done is being discussed behind closed doors. If they decide yes, okay, which we know they already did, but if they officially decide yes, we don't have a right to know, because we don't have a right to vote on it. We don't have a. This is the direction we're moving in. I'm not sure that we're there yet, but this is, we're just one step away from there if we're not. I mean, this is what's in the mix of churning in this engine, you know, that, and then, of course, now every geoengineer we spoke to at the conference in New Orleans recently, that just a couple weeks ago, were against geoengineering. They didn't think it was a good idea, but it might be necessary.
Well,
I'll show you a whole bunch of things before the end of this.
Well, the phrase has it, don't mess with Mother Nature. You know, I mean, it took evolution eons to get where we are in relation to the weather, and just because we have the ability to change it doesn't mean it's a good idea. In fact, there's overwhelming reason to presume that, in fact, it's going to have adverse, unanticipated effects that we aren't going to like.
And I'm here to tell you, what do you think's been going on? So the next slide, this is the other reason we may not want to mess with this stuff. Weather as a force multiplier, owning the weather in 2025, the Air Force document admitting to wanting to own the weather in 2025. And the next slide, why would anyone want to do this? Well, potential weather modification capabilities. It's kind of, it can do both. It could degrade enemy forces, or it can enhance friendly forces. Precipitation enhancement or precipitation avoidance. Storm enhancements, storm modification. Space weather, fog and cloud generation, precipitation denial. I mean, your imagination is the limit.
I have seen a projection that by 2025, the U.S. population is going to have diminished from over 300 million to something like 65 million. And I can't understand where that's coming from and what is supposed to be the causative factors.
Well, I hope that by the time this presentation is done, we'll have answered a lot of that.
Okay, good.
So let's go to the next slide here. So don't tell me that, if this was going on, you would know about it. This is Operation Popeye. This is a weaponization of weather in Vietnam, and Congress did not know about it.
Was that Agent Orange?
You know what? I'm seeing a little mix. No, it wasn't Agent Orange. It was the extension of the monsoon season with a couple simple cloud seeding projects. They weaponized weather. They took out bridges in the Ho Chi Minh Trail. They extended the monsoon season and weaponized weather in essence. And Congress didn't find out about it for 10 years. And then,
so we were doing this already in Vietnam. Unbelievable.
And in the 70s, the UN made a law, a treaty, NMOD treaty, which is the biggest thing in the way of geoengineers right now. They're trying to figure out their way around this. But it's a matter of like the extinction of all life on Earth. So they're going to have to spray because we're all about to die from this huge methane release that's being released from the melting Arctic ice. And look, I don't say yay or nay to any of that. I'm just here telling you when it comes to climate change, whether it's CO2 driven or not, I think there's other factors. And none of what I'm saying here, first of all, let me stop, because none of what I'm saying here is to take away from any other environmental issue. It is clear that we need to get off of our oil dependence. We have a lot of solutions to all of our problems in alternative energies and renewable energies, and we need to start implementing them now. We need to demand the companies make the changes and the transitions for many, many, many reasons, for all the reasons. But no matter what you do, especially carbon taxing, you will not turn climate change around. We're going to be dead before that happens if you don't address climate changing technologies. That's what I'm here to say. So if you can go to the next one, please. I'm not sure which one that is.
That's 57.
Oh, no, you went.
It would be 56, Chance.
Yeah, 56.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, now people say, well, they couldn't do that to us. Well, no, you know, you're right. There's restrictions on the use of human subjects for testing of chemical and biological agents. Secretary of Defense is not allowed to experiment on you for any reason except the following reasons, exceptions. Secretary of Defense can experiment on you for any peaceful purpose that is related to a medical, therapeutic, pharmaceutical, agricultural, industrial, or research activity. That's the first exception to them not being able to spray you. They can for any peaceful purpose. Wait, who decides that? That is related to a medical, therapeutic, pharmaceutical, agricultural, industrial, or research activity. Next is any purpose that is directly related to protection against toxic chemicals or biological weapons and agents.
But that could involve testing them on a human population.
Well, the first one against
them, they could justify wiping out a city on this basis by claiming it was directly related to protection. We had to kill the question and guard against it.
And yeah, and then the third is any law enforcement purpose, including any purpose related to riot control, which, you know, I guess tear gas and all that's chemical stuff. So, yeah, they can basically do what they want. There's a whole big bill to make us feel like we're protected or to, I don't know what. But basically to introduce the exceptions which allows for any of that. So let's move on here to the history here. Weather modification, why does man do it? Because he can, because for thousands of years, man has tried to control the weather. Next, number 57. In the 1800s, I don't have the name of the guy handy. I don't want to go through my notes too much. Was it Colin Powell? No, not Colin Powell. It was a general that was financed by the American military to do rain extracting experiments with weather balloons or whatever. There were lots of those. The craft was rainmaking. And if you go to the library, you could get a book called Rainmakers. There was the theory after a battle, there was always a rain that came down. And they said that it was maybe the cannons were, you know, created all this extra particulate that made the rain. So man has always tried to figure out a way to coax rain out of the clouds. Number 58, please. And right around that time shortly after, next slide, please, Chance. Tesla. Okay, go back to Tesla, please. We're doing one at a time right now. Electric power is everywhere present in unlimited quantities and can drive the world's machinery without the need of coal, oil, gas, or any other of the common fuels. Our greatest mind, inventor, patenter of all time, Nikola Tesla, the man that Einstein said was the smartest man on Earth, when he was asked what it was like to be the smartest man on Earth, he said, I don't know, ask Tesla. Knew that this electricity was in abundance. He invented it with alternating current, and he was able to transfer electricity without wires. But of course, that would have unplugged us from the grid, and since we couldn't put a meter on free energy, we got the metered version. And anyways, his notes, when he passed away, were split between Russia and America, supposedly. Of course, there were confiscations of his notes as soon as he died. And look, if you think that our government was not experimenting with that technology and all they could do and the death rays and all that, then you live in a very nice, happy, happy bubble. It must be nice. But this technology, they've been playing with that for a while. I can't tell you when all it started, what all they did, how early on, but we got some, well, we've got HARP now. So there's, it's another element. You know, they spray the chemicals, which creates a plasma layer, and then you can throw electromagnetic energy at it, and you can charge it. You know, if you just have the air, you don't have as much of a screen to bounce off of. So they can direct the energy however they like once they stimulate the air. We can go to the next one. Yeah, there's a whole lots of rain making, the political rain, the farmer's rain, the merchant's rain. You know, it's it was very desirable. You can skip through the next two slides pretty quickly. There's just examples of I can't tell you what he did. That these were the rain makers attempting rain making technologies. Now the next one's interesting. When we talk about liability, here's our first example of liability. This is Charles Hatfield, who in 1918 decided to answer San Diego's call to fill the, was it the Moreno County? Or no, I don't know, the Moreno Reservoir. One of the reservoirs they had. They'd been going through drought, and they had enough of it. They said, any rainmaker want to make us fill our dams, we'll pay $10,000 to. Charles Hatfield said, yeah, I'm your guide. Give me some time. I'm going to do my magic. So stays out there for a couple weeks, and then it starts to rain, and it rains, and it rains, and it overfills the reservoir, and it floods the fields, and it kills the livestock and a couple people along the way, and their mob comes to take him away, but they protect him anyway. He says, well, look, I did what I did. It's not my fault you didn't like the results, but hey, where's my $10,000? I said, well, you want your $10,000? There's about millions of dollars worth of damages. Why don't you take credit for that?
And They didn't pay him?
They would have paid him if he took the liability. He didn't want the liability, so he didn't take the money that they were willing to. That's the oldest, I mean, you know.
Not that he actually brought it about, or do you think his efforts had anything to do with the rain?
He was pretty sure it did. I mean, it's a lot of speculation over 100 years later, but that's the first example of the liability issue.
What had he actually done to bring about rain?
We don't know. He didn't really let anybody. I mean, that's him mixing his bottles up. They put him in some pans that he evaporates some materials. I have no idea.
Seems most documentation about that. Seems most unlikely to have precipitated this massive rainfall.
Well, but you say that, but you'll see that the next patent, I mean, here, let me get to my notes about the patents. I'm sorry. Where are they? The history timeline, my intensive. I mean, you think that it's been weather modification is a little bit more recent than that, but it really isn't. Please go to the next one. If you would, please. This one here. Okay. I hope I have the first page.
The Illustrated London News.
The Illustrated. So I can actually. Okay. So, yes. The first patent for a cloud-making machine was number 1338343, was issued for process and apparatus for the production of intense artificial clouds, fogs, or mists. Okay, that was in 1920. Hatfield was in 1918. So just 2 years later, the first patent comes out. Now, I knew that by the time a patent comes out, there's already a lot of experimentation that goes on behind it to lead to the patent. So if they got a patent, they already had the process beforehand. They just applied for the patent and got it at that point. And I proved this in the next one because the next patent is 1927 and it's number 1619183, patent for process of producing smoke clouds from moving aircraft issued. And now look at the London Times. I don't know if you can see, but it's 1922.
War chance, 64.
No. Oh yeah, no, the London Times thing is
still up. Yeah.
Is what? 1921.
Right.
So
that's
right here we have an illustration of cloud dispersal from moving aircraft 6 years before the patent. You see what I'm saying?
Very good. 6 years before the patent. I got
it. Before the patent, right. I mean, and then you get into the all right, getting into some of the history. The U.S. White House Department of Weather Modification formed in 1952. In 1947, the U.S. Department of Defense conducts Project Cirrus, in which about 200 pounds of dry ice is dropped into a hurricane heading back out to sea, which, for whatever reason, abruptly changed course and slammed into Savannah, Georgia. The public blamed the government for this catastrophe, so future storm modification experiments took place more secretly. They may not have had any. You see, once you play with a cloud, even if you don't get the results you wanted, you're going to be blamed for the consequences of the indirect. I mean, unless, you know, they've changed that in the laws, but that's the problem when people are aware of climate engineering. So it goes on and on and on. I got pages and pages of historical outline notes. I mean, all this is just notes, patents. Let's go to the next one here. This was, I believe, in Britain. Oh, no, stop here. This was the most dreadful weapon, a sun gun. This was what the Nazis wanted to do. Nazis wanted to do that. And later on, we're going to get to a document called Spacecast 2020, in which is described a bunch of things. One is a system of orbital mirrors in space to redirect terrestrial weather and clouds. Okay, now if that doesn't get scary, what are they doing out there? And what are they doing out there? But anyway, that's an old Nazi fantasy of putting a mirror out there for redirecting sunlight, and it's actually a very feasible thing these days. But anyway, moving on. The next one is a British town that was flooded when there were some experiments done, the Lindale Hotel, somewhere in the 40s, I guess. Next is the Kurt Vonnegut's brother actually gets credited for the, now I'm forgetting his name, I'm a little bit over and saturated with information, but Kurt Vonnegut's brother created the ice nucleation, figured out how to see the clouds using, let me see if I can get it right, instead of... Oh, wait, huh. I'm sorry, I'm gonna skip here. I don't remember his name, and chemical ice, not ice nucleation, but the cloud seeding formula that uses flares. I'm not gonna speak as an expert on that right now. I use my notes because I really don't.
Sure, that's fine.
It's no memory, that's why I've been control
no problem
of space
here.
Means control of the world. From space, the masters of infinity would have the power to control the Earth's weather, to cause drought and flood, to change the tides and raise the levels of the sea, to divert the Gulf Stream and change the climates to frigid. There is something more important than the ultimate weapon. Lyndon B. Johnson, 1958. Here's another quote. That is the quote. Great. All right. Next quote is from Kennedy. Next slide, please. We propose further cooperative efforts between all nations in weather prediction and eventually in weather control. JFK's speech at the United Nations, 1961. Next slide, please. I think I might have had a double in there earlier, but this is Vietnam, Project Popeye. You can, I didn't mix it up with. You can click on the next one. I can tell you about. Do I have Skyfire here?
Yeah, it's right there.
Project Skyfire and Storm Fury. Both are studies into lightning and hurricane manipulation. Go into the next one. And of course we know about Agent Orange. Horrible chemtrail example. That's a different kind of chemtrail. It's not climate engineering. It's straight on spray the buggers. And this is how I got into it, because I did that during the BP oil spill with the Corexit, the dispersant. They just sprayed on everything and sometimes on people or whatever got in the way. They just sprayed. So that's also a chemtrail. It's aerial dispersal. It's low. It's not for climate engineering, but it's for, I don't know. I can't give any value to that. It's for madness.
And this is all very troubling, though. Look at this.
It's absolutely just horrendous. And the genocide continues in a slow kill version of it that they got right. So let's go to the next one. Keep moving forward here. Technology will make available to the leaders of major nations techniques for conducting secret warfare, of which only a bare minimum of the security forces need be appraised. Techniques of weather modification could be employed to produce prolonged periods of drought or storm. Zbigniew Brzezinski, CFR member, founding member of the Trilateral Commission, National Security Advisor. to five U.S. presidents, 1970, in his book, Between the Two Ages. And I'm going to say something else. Who is the CFR? Well, I'm going to get into them a little bit more later, but according to former CFR president Winston Lord, the CFR runs the world. He says, quote, "The Trilateral Commission doesn't run the world. The Council on Foreign Relations does that," end quote. Just so we know. And Ms. Hillary Clinton, Clinton is on record saying it's good that the CFR moved next door so that way we don't have to go far to be told what to do. I mean, that's who runs the world. You think you're running to the polls and you're going to go vote, and that's great. You're only given three choices, and at the end of the day, there's electronic voting, so they can rig it however they want. But you're not in charge. These guys are in charge. They're the ones whose agenda that is, until we say otherwise, you know. But right now, we got the wool over our heads. The sheep got the wool over their heads. But if we wake up to this, we can bring this puppy back. I really believe that a lot of – it's one of the problems I have with Alex Jones, not to slander anybody, but it's not their agenda that matters. It's ours. They want to paralyze us and distract us and keep us from the truth so that we don't manifest our own intentions in this world. And if we don't know what is going on and we don't have the whole truth, we can't manifest the right intentions in this world. And I believe that a lot of this technology that is being used against us can also be used to liberate us once we realize it's there. And there's a lot of denying that some of this technology exists. There is and there isn't, as you'll see. Go ahead, next page, please. 73. Spacecast 2020. Air University. A future scenario. That's where the system of orbital mirrors and a whole bunch of other satellites and Star Wars basically gets outlined in this. This is a predecessor to the document Owning the Weather in 2025. Number 74, please. Now, in 1997, you have Secretary of Defense William Cohen saying that others are engaging even in an eco-type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. And it's not on here, but he continues to say, and that's why we must intensify our efforts. So when he was saying this was a terrorism meeting, he was saying that other people have this technology in the world, and we need more money to fight these terrorists.
But he really meant to enhance our own technology so we can be the masters of weather warfare.
Exactly. And I mean, if you think that the largest industrial military complex nation in the universe is doesn't have access to this technology, I have some land I want to send you.
Right. Right.
So, the next slide, please. And I'm sorry, it's frustrating too, because it's been like years of trying to get people to realize. And as I've been accumulating data, it's like I have all the evidence if you have the time. And it's not just me. I'm standing on the shoulders.
I think it's terrific. I'm very pleased to have you on, Raphael.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you. Well, look at this. Okay, so we've got here national. I mean, if this is correct or whatever, I'm not arguing that or whatever. I'm not here to tell you that. But 19. Okay, so we have up and down and little fluctuations, but 1998 is when it spiked up. I don't know if Bob's going to point to it. See how in 1998, right before 2000, there's a big spike up. Well, what happened in the mid, public law 105-85 that says they can spray us was introduced in 96. In 97, Secretary of Defense admits this technology exists. In 1995, 1996, mid-90s is when reports in laymen, citizen like you and me, that farmers started, people that were connected to the earth out in their land, seeing these planes come out, seeing things starting to be affected by it. The reports of, even though climate engineering has been going on for decades, the next scale of full-on was noticed in the mid-90s. That's when the projects were getting exponential and complaints were coming up. And it was in all the NATO countries. It wasn't everywhere in the world. And you know, more and more places were seeing it for more and more. And it's interesting that just after 1996, 1997, that's when you have the spike. So is there a relation? Could it be that after a couple of years of really going heavy, we have, that's something that we can't know if we're not talking about if the histories, we can't have a climate change conversation without talking about climate change. technology.
Yep, you're so right. Raphael, is this a good point to take our break? We have to take a couple minutes break. It could be any time now. The next slide.
How about I do the next three real quick? This is Aaron. This is Hurricane Aaron that was coming for New York City on September 11th, 2001. No one knew about it. It was the only hurricane never dramatized by TV news reporters. Why? I will not answer that question. It's just a question. Next, please.
There are students of 9/11 who believe it had something to do with the events in New York, but I've never been clear on what it was they...
I've heard Judy Wood's presentation, which is very convincing. I've heard people contradict that. It's irrelevant. There was still a hurricane that was...
But what did it take to be Judy Wood's theory about the role of Aaron?
Well, she said that the hurricane trekked off three different times at the times that the towers went down. She also says that the Hutchinson effect is, they like to say that there is no the technology for cold fusion doesn't exist, but it does exist, actually. It's just been peer reviewed that it doesn't exist. So there's more technology out there that we don't know about. Bottom line, I'm not going to draw conclusions for you here. I'm just trying to take you through why it's relevant and what all we need to start looking at and talk about. This here, Sandy. Okay, so you don't want to talk about chemtrails because you've got a life, you're busy? I mean, how many mega hurricanes were there to hit New York City ever? I mean, look at how one storm messes everybody's life up. You know, you take time to understand and address this issue now, or you take time to be a victim of it later, period. You ain't nobody getting off this ride. And one more, and we're going to...
Take a break, yeah.
Oh, this was just a picture of the... I guess it's a small slide, but... These were the effects. You know, there were chemtrails, and you've got all these weird formations now, ice crystals or whatever they want to call them, these secondary effects. But can we do two more slides and take a break or no?
Well, it would be better to wait, but go ahead if you
want. Okay, well, with a modification in history in Texas, cloud seeding has occurred in various locations since the 1950s. It goes on and on. Next slide, and then we'll call it a break. With modification in Texas, 1990s to now. So, you know, I mean, there's plenty of projects. There's one project that lasted 30 years, but that was in the last slide. So we're going to take a break at this point.
This is Sachin Fetzer, your host, with my special guest, Raphael O'Neill. We're discussing climate engineering, weather modification, and the geoengineering agenda. We'll be right back.
Less than 3% of you people read books. Because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets, turn them off now, turn them off and leave them off.
Now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963.
chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen to it.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, continuing my conversation with Raphael O'Neill about geoengineering, weather modification, and the like. A really fascinating stuff, Raphael. I'm very, very pleased you're here to present this.
I am in heaven being able to disseminate this information to your audience, as many people as possible, because it's really exhausting. It's a lot of research, and it's out there, and there are other people doing it, and it's my particular way of assembling it and getting it out there. But now is the time. We all, even if there are any chemtrail activists listening out there, we gotta like up it. We gotta like have presentations. We gotta reach out to our churches, to our council, to our weather reporters, and get them to be accountable for it, to let them know that we know that there's climate engineering going on, that we don't approve of it, that we don't like that they're not telling us the truth about it. We have to start holding people accountable, or we're going to be sprayed like bugs. Or their goal of reducing the world population very drastically is going to happen very naturally. I mean, you're just going to get sick. Health is going to continue to deteriorate, cancers and mental neural disorders and a whole bunch of other things we'll get into. Let's move to the next slide. I'd like to also say, people say, well, there's a whole lot of research on the desired global warming being the desired consequence for businesses. There's a history of businesses wanting global warming. Here's how to change the North American climate in an old article. Go to the next one, please. I'm not sure if to move the earth and melt the pole. It was there was a New York Times article that said it was a wild idea, but didn't poo-poo it.
Why would it be a good idea?
Well, look, let's go to the next slide here. Because you would melt the ice, you would make you would make nicer weather, right? It would be, oh, we wouldn't have all that ice. It wouldn't be so cold. It'd be like Florida up in New York, and the trade routes and access to the resources deal.
Isn't that loopy, Raphael? Do you think there's any virtue in that whatsoever? I think it's a terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea. Of course it is.
There's all this methane gas that has been trapped that's now being released.
And it's the somebody said it's the ultimate hubris. This whole climate engineering is the ultimate hubris of man, his ultimate ego, that he thinks he can manage the atmosphere. And actually, you even have the Air Force admitting when they recently closed HARP or something. And some people, I think that was just to throw people off, because HARP is not the only facility.
Well, I don't believe they closed HARP anyway. I mean,
it's not even really matter if they closed HARP, because they have a lot of other technologies which
may be more sophisticated. Yes.
more sophisticated or they don't need it. But they admitted that they didn't need it anymore to manage the ionosphere, because I guess they've got other ways of managing the ionosphere. How do you manage the ionosphere? Why would you manage the ionosphere?
Why don't you get the history of what you have actually done using HARP then for us to know?
Exactly. Well, so anyways, on the next clip here, we see in number 84, geoengineering proposals in 1962 to warm the climate regarded as a good idea. In 2012, geoengineers said climate warming requires solar radiation management. I'm going to go to the next slides here. I'm not sure about 85. It looks like it's an empty one.
Yeah.
86. Just keep going. All these are pictures I've taken until I tell you they're not, of solar radiation management. Look at that. It looks like a chemical oil spill.
It does.
Yeah. And that wasn't an effect of my camera. That was how it looked to the naked eye. Look at this nice rectangular cloud on the next slide. It seems like if there's going to be one cloud in the sky, it's going to be in front of the sun. Go to the next
By the way, chances observed that there are 72 different HARP locations around the world. So closing one or two.
Plus the ground arrays. And, well, we're going to go into some other. There's some people are thinking NEXRAD doesn't just read the weather, but it also affects the weather and stimulates tornado production. And we'll show you the evidence that we have for that. It's just this, like, I mean, I didn't see clouds like that. I remember look at this. This picture is black and white. It's not black and white. I'm sorry. Go back, please. Go back to number 94. This picture, I don't know how well the quality comes out, but this is a color photo. So you see the white cloud is away, and then around the sun is not blue because I didn't have a good camera. I have a fantastic $500 camera that was gray. That was a gray behind the cloud. I shot that in Israel. Solar radiation management. Okay, you can go to the next one. At least this next phenomenon, number 95, used to be a rare one, the sun halos. You can see that almost every day there's a chemtrail now because it creates the right condition to make the effect. This was a jazz fest in New Orleans. Go ahead to the next slide, please. There are other technologies. I don't know how they do it. It's like going to the hairdresser. They know how to brush that stuff out, comb it out, blow it out. Look at that cloud, powder puff right in front of the sun. Like if there's going to be a powder puff cloud, high altitude, you're like, where are these clouds coming from? I've never seen such high altitude clouds. There it is. It's going to be right in front of the sun. I don't have an explanation for everything I see. I mean, but look at it. I mean, I remember when I came to America, I moved here from France when I was 5 years old, and I remember the white puffy clouds, and I remember my mom being moved to tears, and her little girl was calling. I said, Mama, look at the clouds. They look like cotton balls.
I'm not familiar with these guys. Like a cotton field upside down.
Here we're going to have some of the HARP, the electromagnetic interferences. They want to call them gravity waves. I don't buy that. I don't buy that. Why does Rembrandt not have any pitchers of these? There's a hole punch cloud to say it's a plane that goes through it that makes that. That's completely absurd. These are electrically stimulated clouds. This is what you see in planes. You see cloud coverage unless there is a front, a cold front actually coming through. They send the jet stream down. You're not going to get a clear sky anymore. Go to the next one. This is my phone app. Okay, look at. Do you see the texturized sky? Guess what that is. Is that a cloudy day? No. Go to the next one. It's a sunny day. Or it's partly cloudy or partly sunny, or they play around with the words, but it looks the same every day. They're just jerking us. Okay, so here we have an example. Slow down here. Electrochemically induced gravity waves. Chemically induced persistent contrails. Chemically induced spreading persistent contrails. That's how they work. They get laid out. They get fanned out. They get zapped. Next, please. Here we have HARP, High Active Auroral Research Project or something like that. I should know by now, but I, like I said, I have to work really hard to commit things to memory. You can go to the next one. That's the array that's in Fairbanks, Alaska. This is some of the stuff that was in, what is that, Owning the Weather? In, or is this, this might be from Spacecast 2020. It's satellite capabilities and just the ability to bounce this.
Do you think they've already put
off the chemtrails and what's that?
Do you think they've already put enough stuff in the atmosphere to take out a very large percentage of the U.S. population?
Well, listen to this. When people say, well, we got to do this to protect against Russia and if China gets this, and I think that the animosity is just a game on the surface. This is my theory, okay? And it bases on things like in the during the Cold War, America and Russia were blowing nukes up in the atmosphere in Project Fishbowl together. So joint cooperation in nuclear testing. You know, there's one story that we're getting, and then there's different layers of participation behind that. And I'm sure there's different agendas, not like there aren't different agendas, but they're all working towards the same goal, and that's the consolidation of power and the enslavement of humanity is the way I see it. It's the only conclusion I can come to after researching this. Next slide, please. So what are they spraying? Chafe admitted. DOD, the U.S. Air Force, sprays aluminum chafe for missile defense and other because aluminum has high electrical conductance. It's actually, aluminum is like 4 times more reflective than sulfur, which they want to make us think they're going to be using sulfur.
Yeah, this stuff can't be good for a human
consumption. No.
It's got to have effects like asbestos.
It's their nanoparticles. They pass through the blood barrier. But we're going to get into the effects of that later on here. Next slide, please. How beautiful. Just miles and miles of clouds.
And no one can think that's a natural formation of clouds.
Oh, but yet the denial persists. But most people don't sit through all this evidence. Well, they deny. They sit through 2 minutes of it, and then they say they got to go. So go to the next one, please. I mean, why is there no Rembrandt of that? Why is there no Leonardo da Vinci capturing that fabulous formation? You mean to tell me that no great artist in the history of mankind ever thought it valid enough of a phenomena to capture for posterity? Come on. Next one, please. Next one is the radars. So we have these HARP rings. They show up. There's like an undesired consequence of this technology being used. These rings show up, and then they kind of stimulate the area, and then storms move in shortly thereafter. Laymen, weathermen have been capturing these oddities and do all the time. Here's some more HARP rings. And then you have scalar squares in the next one. These actually repel things out of the center. I don't know how all this is done. You can do your own research.
I live down there somewhere.
You live down there somewhere? Hi.
Yeah.
Go to the next one. Now here's where NEXRAD at work. Got this guy's like, you know, figuring out. I mean, you can see the disturbances, and then you could see the tornado that's being that interacts with it, and other people have done really great jobs of documenting this. I only have so much time as a self-employed single mom to wrap my head around every aspect thoroughly, 100%. I just know enough to know enough, and it's a lot, and it's enough. I've had enough of this. I want to forget all of this. Every day I just want to go and do
keep going.
But I can't.
Keep going, Raphael.
Half-truths about geoengineering. This is David Keith was in a few movies. He was on the Colbert Report to talking about scientists may have to do this. He's like, people have actually known you could do these things for better or for worse for decades, actually since the 60s, but people were sort of afraid to talk about them in polite company. This technology gives us this enormous kind of leverage and power to alter the climate and to do it with a very small amount of money and material. And that power should frighten us, I think. And it presents real deep problems for governance. That's true. Well, the real truth is that geoengineering is weather warfare and has been going on for decades. Next, please. So those of you, you know, here we have divide and conquer. The left saying that, you know, CO2 is causing global warming, and the right saying the man can't affect climate change. Well, maybe both are wrong and right. Maybe man is causing climate change through government geoengineering programs. There are other things that affect the warming of the planet. I'm not saying that. I'm saying there's nothing you can do to those other things that will stop climate change if you're not addressing climate-changing technologies. You won't. You'll watch your kids die if you don't die before.
How can there be any debate about whether climate change is real, Raphael?
Well, because there's been some fabrication to some facts. So when one researcher, look, there's a division in the chemtrail community. Some people are saying, yes, CO2 is a real problem. Some people say CO2 is a straw man. What's the problem is sulfur, and chemtrails and climate engineering. Look, I'm not going to take a stand on that because I'm not about dividing the camps. I'm about unifying.
Well, even if you set CO2 to one side, isn't there more than enough you're documenting here to show that there is a serious problem with global warming regardless?
Well, if for nothing else, which is, this is my specialty, in this area, climate engineering will cause global warming and does and has been used long enough to, for us to be living through the consequences of that. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that fracking isn't a contributor, that at coal mining definitely is. I don't know. Increase in CO2 may not be correlation to just because there's an increase in CO2. I'm not expert in that, so I'm not going to put my foot in my mouth. But I do know that climate engineering is highly effective. It is being minimized in its effectiveness to downplay the significance so that it doesn't enter the conversation, and it's absurd. It has to be on the climate change conversation table. It's a climate-changing technology, and there's multiple and many. So here's another aspect of the problem I had with the What in the World movie that turned me on to this issue and the Why in the World. And granted, you have to focus, but they did not talk about Morgellons, and I personally know at least six people with Morgellons. Three of them know that they got it from touching, two caught it from touching funny fallout, one from being caught in a funny rain.
What have they suffered from?
Morgellons. It is a...
Really? Morgellons? That's weird. Those organisms are bizarre.
They're self-replicating nanofibers they kind of go across the different species. And there's a patent for it here. They're these fibers, and they come out of the skin, and they're very painful, and the CDC refuses to acknowledge it. They call people who suffer from this disease crazy.
But isn't it debilitating? I mean,
it is completely debilitating, but there are people who manage it.
Would it bring about brain damage, for example?
Well, go ahead and click the next slide, please.
Chance wants to get in on this. Yes.
Yes. So here's all the fibers when they're laid down. If you ever see this in your backyard, do not touch this. Go to the next one.
Chance wants to say
to throw a comment about the Morgellons. When we were doing the global march against chemtrails, and there was the worldwide protest where every city around the world had their own march, I was leading the Toronto march here in Canada. And we had
New Orleans.
Yeah. I did the call-in show where all the different shows called into NBC and reported what was happening. Well, one of the ladies had called in. She was also at the march, and she had Morgellons. She had gone and got slides by scientists actually showing, you know, the 100-time microscope, showing them coming out of her body. And it was because of the chemtrail. She actually captured rainwater and other different samples, all trying to prove to people that this was one of the things that are added into the chemtrail, the agenda that isn't being talked about.
Absolutely. And this is the biggest evidence of weaponization of like not benign agendas and the really dark, the darker agenda. Some people, you know, will say this is, if you can go into the next one.
Trying to kill us.
Transhumanism. If you're familiar with transhumanism, and we have a history of eugenics, which is, you know, about selecting which genes or whatever, but it's more than that. It's about
122, Chance. 122.
Yeah, go ahead, please. 122. This is a Magellan's in the, you know, under the microscope. You can do the, go ahead and click through these really gory shots. Now, here's some good news we found out recently, and we, some people are getting results with this. It might vary for the individual. You can't cure these chemically because they're not chemical. You can't, some people manage eating organic and eating like, well, this is it coming in out of the skin. And just stop right there after you're done. And I'm sorry to freeze on that one, but it's pretty horrible. Joni Mitchell is suffering from this disease as well.
That's very bizarre.
It's absolutely horrendous. But what they're finding that does work, you may want to check this negative charge because they're electrical, somewhat electrical. I can't even explain it. I'm not, but they're electronically based, or they're alive. But when you use negative charge,
they have an electrical composition that's positive, so you the negative charge will neutralize them.
That's what I'm hearing. So hey, if that gets, if somebody wants to come back and tell me that that worked for them, that's great. But there's some videos that's on that. So look in that direction.
What happens to people who have untreated Morgellons?
I'm sure they die. I mean, I've even heard of things. Oh God, Sophia Smallstorm does a presentation that's amazing about. Just Google her her presentation at the Chemtrail talk on it was transhumanism and Morgellons and the transhumanistic agenda. She does a really good job of presenting some information and some of the things some people had, the Morgellons would come out and out of it would hatch like a bug. And in some cases, insects would come out of people's skins and run for their life like they were their own. I mean, some scary stuff, but we don't need to be afraid. We need to be concerned that we're watching the end of all that is sacred.
We need to know what the hell is going on.
And yeah, and if we don't, it ain't going away. I promise you. I spent a good bit of my life having fun and the problems in the world didn't go away. So being positive is useless if it's not coupled with action. So don't deny what is, deny its power over you. The next slide is actually the movie, I hope. Let's see if it plays. This is what's at stake with the health environment. Does it play, or you might have to go to my...
I think Chance has to play it separately.
Well, let's see. Vitamin D Deception. You can go on the... I don't know if you have the YouTube link or...
We do not expect this generation of kids now, the ones born after 2000, to outlive their parents.
That's already going on right now in Louisiana.
It's going on all over. It isn't just there.
I do direct patient care, and I get all their labs, and I do diet therapy with them. And so, of course, vitamin D, they'll send them to me and say, hey, let's get their vitamin D intake up. You can't do it with food.
What's the situation with vitamin D and the people that come in here?
We're finding now that about 90% deficiency rates.
Because when they come in, it is, some of them are so sick they can hardly walk through the door. And it's chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, heavy metal toxicity, environmental illness, and whatever other label you want to put on it, almost every single one of them is deficient in vitamin D and iodine.
That's right. And who are you and what do you do?
I am a physician, internal medicine, alternative care.
You know, every year we do a big health fair here and check people's blood work. And so I've been doing that for, maybe 8 years or so. So, you know, that's maybe 600 people. I've probably had three, maybe four people, certainly, you can count on one hand out of that 600, the amount of people that have had a normal vitamin D level.
Over the past probably 2 years, I have tested several hundred people for iodine. Only four have come back normal.
Same story in Amarillo. Out of 600 people, four were normal for vitamin D and iodine. Four out of 600.
I probably had six to eight that were normal in vitamin D.
Every patient that I've seen that has had their vitamin D level checked has been low. It doesn't matter whether they're in the sun, out of the sun, use sunscreen, don't use sunscreen, whether they're fair skin, dark skin. It doesn't matter. And most of them have been severely low. A level of around 11 to 13 is generally what I see, which is severely low. And I've never yet seen a patient check that did not have a normal, or that did have a normal vitamin D level.
Explain vitamin D as a hormone and explain how it is the system driver, basically, and what can go wrong if that's not in our bodies.
Well, it controls many of your functions.
But is it a vitamin?
It is a vitamin that acts as a hormone, which some of your vitamins do. So it's kind of both, but it's involved in bone formation. Without vitamin D, you're not going to lay down bone. In fact, you'll break down bone. It's involved in so many processes that if you don't have it, you're going to be very sick. And I think that's probably...
And in speaking with the former nutritionist and in reviewing the former reports, just even 15 to 18 years ago, maybe one out of every 100 clients had any sort of toxic metal or any toxicity. Now we have 99 out of 100 with toxic levels of either lead, mercury, arsenic, cadmium, or aluminum, or the combination of coal.
So, yeah. I don't know if you caught that. She starts off saying they do not expect that the next generation will live to be as old as this generation. So what that means to me is that my son, if I live to be 60 and survive the calling, because I'm is not expected to live to be 60. If I die in the next 5 years or 10 years of this project unfolds, he's not expected to live that long. Now, if you're going to survive this calling, I think you understand what's going on and working on the detox and vitamin D and iodine and all that, anything you could do to supplement yourself, because this is genocide. And this is Ted Gunderson, former FBI chief, saying chemtrails must be stopped. This is genocide. This is poison. This is murder by the United Nations. This element within our society that is doing this must be stopped. Rest in peace, Ted. Thank you for sharing that. Next one, this is again nervous system damage from the sky, asthma and the children. We can go on with non health effects. Let's go to the next one and look at what some of the lovely ingredients in these chemtrails are here. I am going to have to read it on my screen. I have probably most of these. I don't know. Aluminum, I have arsenic, barium, I have all these, cadmium, desiccated human blood cells, ethylene dibromide, lead, magnesium, mercury, mold spores, mycoplasma, polymer fibers, radio cesium, radioactive, sharp titanium shards, strontium, submicron particles, unidentified living bacteria, uranium, which I have in my blood, seven times the average. My son has seven times the average uranium.
Really?
Yeah. And many other toxins. So it's pretty amazing, actually, that you can function for as long as you can. But then, you know, but how many friends do you have dying of cancer, and how many friends do you have with immune disorders, neurological disorders, weird fatigue they can't explain? You know, I mean, there's a lot of things going on in our world. There's our diet, there's our food, there's our water. There's a lot of elements to this. But the sky affects us all. So let's look at the next one, please. Crop analyst Rosalind Peterson, who actually made a presentation to the UN about the hazards of this and the well-documented soil analysis results in California. California's been very organized in gathering data because they kind of maybe, I don't know if they got the first brunt of it, but they've been in this, forced drought, fake drought. She says, once you have air pollution and add aluminum, it allows the tree roots to uptake the aluminum, which then prevents the roots from absorbing water and nutrients to survive. This leads to death, which looks like drought. Let's go to the next slide. Alan Buckman, U.S. Air Force meteorologist, 1960 to 64, California Department of Fish and Game wildlife biologist, retired researcher. This man is above Menzies, like there's another club above Menzies. Super bright man. This is his presentation, Man-Made Climate Change in the Sky. So it's not his whole presentation, but I stole a few slides off of his. If you can go to the next one, please. alarming Mount Shasta data for soil pH. Historic is 5.5, now it's 6.8. And this was years ago, okay? 10 times more alkaline than it needs to be. Vegetation.
This is simply stunning stuff. I mean, this is going to affect the flora and the fauna, what's habitable, what's uninhabitable. I mean, this is stunning.
And let me tell you, the Shasta community had the largest county hall meeting that they called, with well over 100 people in attendance. And they dominated that meeting, and they had scientists and doctors and pilots all testifying to the assault that's going on, demanding answers. I don't know what the outcome of that is, but California is getting more and more organized. But it's going to require everyone stepping up. And we have to put aside our partisan differences and all that crap and just come together on the most important.
We're going to have to figure out how to reverse the effects. I mean, it's going to require.
Well, let's stop it, first of all. And then we might have some whiplash because the Earth is going to. But we're stopping the hydraulic system, the Earth's cooling effect. The Earth is like this intelligence that is just divine and perfect. Even in disasters, there's a yin and a yang. If there's an extreme weather event, it brings homeostasis afterwards. But we're interrupting the Earth's ability to even handle CO2 because now we're drying out the air with all these cloud seeding experiments. So there's less moisture in the air to counter the effects of CO2. And there's great presentations. Dane Wigington has one on geoengineeringwatch.com. I would go there. Let's go to the next one. A lot of experts speak on this. Seriform paint, artificial overcast, can be too thin to notice. Solar experts has cut solar illumination 25 to 40%. Dane Wigington has this solar farm out in California. He noticed the loss in yield of sun units, however that gets measured. Magnifies storms and solid particles and metal compounds. Metallic haze all the way to the grounds. Fires. Okay, look, we want to talk about the fires in California and everywhere on the West Coast. It's just aluminum nanoparticles are even more flammable. I mean, it all makes things even more flammable. Soil pollution, water pollution, threat to all wildlife species and ecosystems. Some say that the bees are not just dying where the fertilizer is being used around the farms. They're dying in the wilderness, too, where there is none of these chemicals.
Well, that's very significant. I thought it was Roundup, Monsanto's.
Well, that'll kill everything, I'm sure. But not just the farms are experiencing I get that source from Dane Wigington. You can find out where he cites his research. He's very well documented. Let's go to the next slide, please.
What effect is it having on the warming of Earth?
It cools. So what they threaten now, they're threatened that if they stop doing it, it's going to get hotter. Well, it will initially, but we will stop destroying the ozone. We will stop creating extra cloud cover. I mean, like I said, Venus has a lot of clouds. It's a very hot surface. In 1987, every drinking water supply in California was contaminated with metal compounds, aluminum, barium, strontium, boron, and others.
What does that do to the human body? Because all that's going into the ground and water, and it's contaminating all the food we eat that is grown in that ground and nourished.
Sure. And they like to say that aluminum is, you know, freely occurring in nature, but it doesn't. It's not free.
I cannot imagine that aluminum nanoparticles are good for any living thing.
No, it's not, and we're on the same page on that. So let's get to the next slide because I want to make sure all this information lands. Okay, so we got tree death in the Sierra Nevada mountains of California has doubled since 1983. We can, your viewers can pause this later on. We can go.
Well, you know, what happens when we kill all the trees? I mean, for God's sake! I mean, this is unbelievable. The trees. Are responsible for replenishing our oxygen. They're consumers of CO2.
Yeah, I guess that's where the lizards go underground and the rest of us flop around on the surface. I don't know. You tell me what it's going to look like. It's looking right now like a slow kill. Mysteries. With an existing solar shield already in place and an obvious spray program, how is it climate experts don't see it? Great question. With increasing cloud cover, 25 to 40% loss of illumination, how can solar burning high UVIR levels occur? And why doesn't it reduce UV levels instead of increasing them? Why chemtrail particles of high reflectivity and electrical conductance harp can imitate the sun and with frequency wave projection raise UV levels? Is this where the heat is coming from? Is this how NOAA EPA can predict UV levels? With changes in forest pH and increasing toxic levels of metal concentration, aluminum, strontium, barium, etc., in waters and soils, how is it the environmental agencies don't know of it or respond to it? Here's the deal. Alexa, I'm not going to say her name because I don't know. Climate engineering activist, anti-climate chemtrail activist, who went to the summer Paris conference, climate conference last year, she's an environmental lawyer, and she called the EPA up, and they gave her like some brush off excuse. Oh, la, 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 contrails, la, la, la. And she said, na, 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 na. And she got them, she asked the right questions. He says, they said, well, we know that they're doing, the military is doing some things, and it's okay, because they tell us it's okay. We said, well, do you have she asked about a form, a particular form they need to have researched or filled out to make sure that they're not lying about it. They haven't done any of their own testing or they haven't done that. So the EPA is not doing their job.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. So here we have a solar radiation with cirriform cloud cover in June. How do they forecast HARP? Anyway, let's move on to the next one because there's still a couple of videos here. Go ahead. This one is just, why aren't environmentalists demanding an end to the aerosol chemical contamination of the planet? How can you be a climate change activist and completely brush off climate change? Hopefully it's just because climate changing technologies, and hopefully it's because it's so spread out, the information is so spread out, but now that it's on your show, they'll know. The environmentalists will know, and people will have access to this information in a consolidated area and not be able to deny it. I mean, I don't have anyway, excuse me, I get frustrated sometimes.
Nice thought, Raphael.
141. So to recapitulate here, we have a different agenda. We have shown example. Oh, no, next one, please. This one's blank. Chemtrail agendas, political, global warming, sunlight reflection, CO2 charging, taxing, whatever, military, weather warfare, HARP, financial, food control, Monsanto. Oh, Monsanto has aluminum-resistant seeds they're selling now, and they also have stock in weather companies, and Rothschild just recently bought up a bunch of the radar systems. And then we have the spiritual aspect, the transhumanism, the fibers in the blood. So there's a lot of, how do you want to slice this puppy up? What do you care about? They're getting us from all sides. Never do one thing when you can do 10. 142 is what?
Greenhouse gases.
Oh, okay. Yes. All right. So this is going to be a video, and I'm just going to say, I'm going to just come back to New Orleans here for a second. We're nearing the point of it all here. American Meteorological Society. See if I can just flip through the highlighted sections. I don't know if you could see the highlights. These are all the aerosol talks at the last conference, okay? Aerosol talks at the meteorological conference. Why is aerosol such a big part of weather conferencing? It's happening. Now, we got to speak with them, and we really believe that there's different levels of participation in the evils of this. There's the higher level that knows exactly what the ultimate agenda is and the deception that's required. There's the lower levels that just regurgitate whatever is passed their way, and they're committed to keeping their job and excelling in their profession, and they got blinders on and denial, and they don't have all the information. And then there's other people who know nothing about it. They're suppliers or whatever, but they're just providing the supplies. So we were able to, I was able to present information to a lot of the people at the conference that they hadn't heard, bits of information they hadn't heard. I was able to learn what their disconnect was from this. And there's a bunch of disconnects that they have. Let me see here. Let me get a little closer to this. Oh, but here we have universities and associates, weather modification corporations, universities and derivatives traders. You can bet on the stock market on weather. I mean, talk about who's got something to gain. All right, let's see, one second here. Let's see if I can, yeah, we heard that it was too expensive to actually deploy, so they didn't think it was going to be an issue because it was expensive. They thought it was too complicated, and just wanted to show this video. David Keith, this is from What in the World Are They Spraying? Geoengineer talks about actually how inexpensive it's going to be, and what the governance issues are and the moral hazard.
Preface to another video clip, right?
Yes, here we go.
Okay.
The little picture is from a nanofabrication study, which shows you can make very high quality, and do this in just a jet in a very simple way, make high quality aluminum particles just by spraying aluminum vapor out, which oxidizes. So it's certainly in principle possible to do that. There's a big literature that's already looked at that. And you could do that by either building new versions of these aircraft or even re-engineering existing aircraft. So there's some ideas of that. So you go to an engineering firm and you want this done. They don't say this is hard or unusual. They say, okay, yes, we could do it. Aerosol geoengineering looks like it is so cheap that the cost is basically not going to be an issue. That means that implementation decisions will be risk-to-risk decisions. The risk of doing it against the risk of not doing it. And it makes the problem of how we govern it fundamentally harder and different and normal. So I've told you this, cheap to deliver materials to the stratosphere, and I'm convinced that's true. I don't think that will change. But I think the more we do research, the less easy this will look, the more complicated the environmental effects will look. And that's a good thing, because right now it looks too easy. So I think that if we do more research, we're likely to find out that it's harder and more complicated than we thought, and that the side effects are harder to manage. And that's a healthy outcome that will make it easier to do the management. Of course, the opposite reaction is possible. It's an empirical question how people will actually react to knowledge about this. Another reaction is to say, if these crazy scientists are so concerned about putting CO2 in the atmosphere, they want to think about these things, then that might actually mean we should be more serious about the risks of CO2 in the atmosphere. And by the way, it's not really a moral hazard. It's more like free riding on our grandkids. And by the way, it's not really a moral hazard. It's more like free riding on our grandkids.
One.
Yeah, so you get on the next clip.
The next clip?
143, please. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know about you. Do you want a free ride on your grandkids? Because it's not even our grandkids. It's happening right now. We're free riding on ourselves. So you heard how he's saying it's so cheap that it looks like it's going to be too easy. And what we need to do is more research to make it look harder. And that'll be a good thing because it'll make it easier to control because they don't want everybody playing with this stuff. Who's going to put their hand on the remote control? So, and you saw it was cheap. So one of the disconnects with the meteorologist at the conference was that it was going to be expensive or that it wasn't going to be effective or that that it's not happening or that it's happening on a small scale. And, you know, hopefully we've painted enough of a picture where you can see this is on a much larger scale. These programs are highly effective. They've been in use for decades. We've proven this through the government's own patents, documents, programs, admissions, reports. This is new information to me. But the real geoengineering agenda that the meteorologists don't get, the bottom rung, the those that are feeding, you know, getting the songbook, the real songbook is here, number 144. Unilateral geoengineering, a few basic ideas about the science to start our discussions, 2008, May 05, Carnegie Mellon University. So unilateral geoengineering, what's that mean? That means we are going to be geoengineering, not you, not me. Like, who does that? So let's go to this is what they were talking about in this paper. Number one, geoengineering's future depends on the passage. Adoption isn't necessarily subject to a vote anymore of treaties or agreements or laws that decriminalize global unilateral control of the climate biosphere. Two, international treaties and laws are weak, gathering dust, but the most pointedly relevant rule is the 1972 Anti-Militarization Environmental Modification Treaty. Three, geoengineering is so cheap that any one or two countries or maybe even one large corporate entity could engage in planet, can engage in the geoengineering of the planet. The cost of geoengineering is minuscule compared to the alternative mitigation, i.e. changing our habits. So it's a fraction of the price of changing our habits. That's it. And if, did you see that, that they, that was another thing that the geoengineer David Keith had said? Well, they might say if these crazy scientists are so, you know, concerned about global warming, then why don't they, you know, do something else? Why don't we stop CO2 from being released into the atmosphere? They don't want to stop using the technology. So I believe this is sponsored by the industries that are already entrenched that want to just save dollars today at the expense of our lives tomorrow. And some people are dead from this already, of course. It's hard to know who. And they're not diagnosed as dead from chemtrails. Neurological problems, you know, just all sorts of things. Morgellons, I'm sure, has at least. Let's go to the next slide on this.
You raise the question, what studies were done of all this geoengineering to ensure, since it was taking place without the consent of the population, that it would be harmless to the population that would be affected? It's clear that essential step was omitted here.
They all say, well, we don't know what the effect, it's going to have an effect. We don't know what the effects. Oh, we only started studying alumina. We've come to no conclusions.
Yeah, but then you ought to verge on the side of caution and say, since you don't know the effects, they could very well be harmful, even massively harmful.
And that's what all the meteorologists are saying. But they're saying it might be a chemo to the cancer of global warming, and we hope it kills more good cells than bad cells, or bad cells than good cells.
If you don't know what you're doing, you ought not to do it.
You ought not to do it, yes, or you should get the at least if we're going to experiment, let's collectively agree that we think that ourselves not have these policies decided behind closed doors after terror attacks that don't allow us to get anywhere. I mean, this has to be a matter of public interest. Anyways, the people who are directing this are saying that they want to control this. I take this to mean that while it would be a very bad idea to allow single nations and other entities to unilaterally engage in geoengineering by modifying the Earth's albedo, we also would be unwise to take the option completely off the table. If we get a large and very serious climate surprise, as a last resort, the world might need to collectively engage in some albedo-modifying geoengineering. Next one.
Collectively engage, right.
Right. But they also say that if those who... this was a CFR paper that I'm quoting right now, the people who own the world and rule it. it is... probably safe to assume that the direct monetary cost of geoengineering would be at least 100 times less the cost of a full program of GHG abatement, and perhaps much cheaper than that, because it is relatively cheap. A nation that had not done much abatement but started experiencing serious climate impacts might be tempted to unilaterally engage in albedo-modifying geoengineering. So anyways, they go on, you know, they define the circumstances that would...
And if I missed it, the definition of albedo is...
is the reflectivity of the clouds. The greater the reflectivity, supposedly, the cooler the planet will be. But there is a cloud, and there's heat trapping, and there's ozone destruction, and there's drying of
the... clouds are made of moisture, and therefore, if you eliminate the clouds, you're eliminating a source of moisture and rain.
Yeah, I mean, they're creating the cloud, but they're stealing moisture from...
Yeah, they're creating chemical clouds rather than natural rain clouds.
I mean, there's sometimes clouds have a certain effect, sometimes they have another, and they have lots of papers saying they don't know, they can't control. Yeah. But they also want to make it look like it's hard to control this because they don't want people like you and me going up there and doing what we want with it. They want control of it. And they want to create, they want us to be in such a desperate situation that we're initiating laws that aren't voted on by the public and are decided behind closed doors. We have just a few more minutes here.
Yes, we're in the countdown. Yes.
Yes. Go for it. I'd like to, people say, well, how can the pilots do this? My son is a pilot. Do you have the pilot one? It's not the next video. It's the one that might have been the doctor talking about.
Oh, you got one more video to play. Yeah.
I got two more videos to play. One's not on here right now. pilot. Do the pilot one, and then we'll do the last one. And if there's time for questions or comments, then
chemtrails. And chemtrails, by the way, barium salts are in chemtrails. They are 10,000 times more toxic to your nervous system than lead. They contain mycobacteria, viruses, Pseudomonas fluorensis, bacteria, human plasma. Wonder what human plasma is doing in chemtrails. And this is not by conjecture. I did a lot of research before I'd ever say this, but these chemtrails are nasty. And there's three reasons for chemtrails. The first is I talked to my NSA buddies at Fort Carson, Peterson Air Force Base, and Buckley, where I was actually their doctor taking care of the pilots flying and spraying the chemtrails. So I know it's real. If anybody says it's not real, they're full of it. Okay, because I'm a whistleblower on the inside, it's not open for discussion. And my NSA buddies told me, 95% of them told me, they were up there trying to spray to reflect the sun out to stop global warming. So most of them are dumb enough to believe that garbage.
She was on when it was VTN.
Okay, here we go. Continue, Raphael.
Okay, so there's that. It's really easy. Just lie to them and they'll do it. You know, they're under orders. Anyways, so what about our meteorologists? By the next clip, please.
Last weather segment. This is inevitably military or something going on. The government, the Air Force, they send out what's known as chaff, and it's a way to experiment with the radar system. And when you see this kind of a pattern like this, you can rest assured there's something going on. They're actually a little bitty magnetic and little bitty strips of, whether it's aluminum, you know, they change it. But what happens is the radar deflects off of all these little pieces, and they use it actually as a jamming mechanism for radar in warfare, but it can also jam our radar and make rain appear that there really is no rain out there. Later on tomorrow, there could be a few showers.
Southern Oregon and Northern California, we've got a bit of an unusual situation. Now, this first portion of the radar cycle, fairly bland and typical, but then you see these bands of very distinct cloud cover moving into the region. That is not rain. That is not snow. Believe it or not, military aircraft flying through the region is dropping chaff, small bits of aluminum. Sometimes it's made of plastic or even metallicized paper products. But it's used as an anti-radar issue, and obviously they're up there practicing. Now, they won't confirm that, but I was in the Marine Corps for many years, and I'll tell you right now, that's what it is. 50 in Medford right now, 48 in Yreka,
43 hours, and this is from more than likely military exercises going out in a designated area off the coast of Key West now. What they do is they sometimes throw some materials in the air that are supposedly non-toxic, and it does show up on the radar. What they use it for is deflecting radar beams for disguising themselves. They usually ships or aircraft in this case, and you can see that this is just not a rain pattern that you would normally expect with a frontal system. Now, the visible satellite imagery will confirm that. We look down there for any kind of clouds, and you don't see any out there. So, obviously, not rain. False echoes from that, again, more than likely military exercises going on down off the coast of the Key West area. Water vapor imagery showing the dry air in place now all across the...
Raphael, you're on.
Great. Thank you so much. So, I mean, hopefully here we gave you a good little tour. Thank you for coming along on our tour this evening. Hope you're more familiar with the city of climate engineering and its relevance to climate change, the importance of your participation in this subject. Number one, stop ridiculizing it. Number two, start talking about it. Number three, start asking questions. Do your own research. Watch this again. Watch other movies. What in the world are they spraying? Why in the world are they spraying? Anything but your first link on Google or when you know your Wikipedia blow off answer, or contrail science, or cloud appreciation society, or there's a few disinfo sites meant to just lull you back to sleep, but you can go back to sleep, but it's not going to change the soil analysis.
It's been wonderful, Raphael. There's one more slide, 148. Is that yours?
They didn't see that?
No.
Oh, sure. Let's do 148. I'm sorry. I thought that had happened. That's the video of the weather.
Oh, so we've actually seen that video. It's just
have this. We? Yes.
We have. Well, Raphael, I can't thank you enough. Chance has a short video of his own he wants to add, but I want to thank you for a super job. I'm very glad I had the chance to feature you tonight, and for which I thank Gary King.
Yes, Patriot Radio has been giving me the stage to do my chemtrail weather reports for years, and I thank him. I thank you.
Terrific.
I thank the listeners.
Terrific, Raphael. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Chance. You too. Keep fighting.
Okay, perfect. Thanks so much, Chance. Yeah, let her rip.
Could a strange substance found by a Southwest Arkansas man be part of a government test? Well, that's the question at the heart of a phenomenon called chemtrails, now getting widespread attention.
Well, they say the government is dumping chemicals on us to control or manipulate the weather.
And they say the unusual-looking jet trails in the sky are actually chemical-laden chemtrails.
The survival of the human race, literally, is at stake. The physical survival, the level of health that people will enjoy, the survival of the planet. If you're concerned about the environment, this is your issue. And yet most people have no idea that it's even going on.
It is called geoengineering, fighting global warming by putting a chemical dust in the atmosphere and reflecting harmful radiation back into space.
You could use barium oxide, for example, which makes big fluffy clouds. You could use tiny little bits of aluminum, which is benign in the environment, and essentially manage the climate.
That is not rain, that is not snow, believe it or not. Military aircraft flying through the region is dropping chaff. Small bits of aluminum, sometimes it's made of plastic or even metallicized paper products, but it's used as an anti-radar issue, and obviously they're up there practicing. Now, they won't confirm that, but I was in the Marine Corps for many years, and I'll tell you right now, that's what it is.
And tonight, one woman says the government's own data shows the chemicals are showing up in our drinking water.
Raphael O'Neill for being here, and all of you for watching.